found Demigod was dead, and she was lying there with us. She's dead, Mitchell gasped. She's dead, and we'll be next.
Chapter 10 Seth. Back out on the balcony, I watched the sunrise and the ocean became an array of blues, lavenders, and pinks. I slept like a baby last night. Sleep hadn't come to me as easily since I'd left Josie. The all-consuming thoughts of her had kept me up, as did the constant struggle to stop myself from going to her. The blood alcohol content I'd been rocking for days probably also didn't help when it came to getting a restful night, but after I'd fed, and Karina had excused herself, I was out like a stoned kid in a game of dodgeball. Feeding was different this time around. Before, I'd be all over the place, buzzed, full of high-octane energy like I'd just smoked crack or something. Not this time. Yeah, I could feel the power in me, stronger than it had been before I'd fed, but I was leveled out. Energized but calm when I woke, minutes before dawn. It had never been like that before. But if I was to believe what everyone was saying, I was truly different now. Bending at the waist, I rested my forearms on the stone railing and stared out over the ocean. Kernels of guilt had sprouted in my chest. There hadn't been a damn thing sexual about the feeding, but there was no denying the level of intimacy it required. Obviously, I had to be physically close to do it. I had to touch the other person. I closed my eyes, remembering how I'd taken from Josie what was not mine to have. A hand pressed just below Josie's breasts. I'd done it out by the graveyard at the Covenant. I'd done it the same way with Karina, minus the orgasm, the kissing, and all that other stuff. Leaving Josie meant I wasn't with her anymore, but I'd rather set my nuts on fire than be with another woman. Maybe one day that would change. But I doubted it. Just like I doubted I'd ever be okay with the idea of her being with someone else, even if that someone else deserved her. Anger snapped alive at the mere thought of her being with someone. I'd kill the son of a bitch that touched her, and yeah, that was wrong. The whole, I can't be with you, but you can't be with anyone else, was another way I was leveling up in the whole stalker biz. But I couldn't change how I felt. Exhaling, I straightened and was about to head back inside when a door farther down opened and Karina stepped in. Good morning, Kyrios. She stopped, clasping her hands together. You appear well rested. I am. I rested my hip against the railing. But I have a feeling you expected that. Her chin inclined as her dark eyes glimmered in the faint morning light. I did. She glided forward, and I wondered if her feet even touched the ground. I sense that you have questions, and I find that knowledge is more easily accepted when the sun has just begun its journey. I arched an eyebrow at that. But she was right. I had questions, lots of them. And while there was still a part of me that just wanted to give zero fucks, something inside me, something new and strong, refused to allow me to walk away from this, from what it was. I do have questions. I answered finally, folding my arms across my chest. Her smile was oddly relieved. Ask away. What are you exactly? The smile slipped. What do you mean? You're a pureblood who is a priestess, I get that, but you're no normal pure. The ether in you is stronger, almost like what I'd feel in a Napoleon. I explained, easily recalling what it had felt like to be around Alex before and after she'd awakened. But I was unaware that priestesses still served the gods, and I have no idea why the ether is stronger in you than an ordinary pure. We have been around since the dawn of time, serving the gods. Just because they have retreated to Olympus does not mean we stop our service. We are just more quiet in our service now.
You mean you just don't sacrifice virgin mortals anymore?
Her lip quirked up on one side. There is that. But those who serve the gods are chosen at birth. The gods we serve mark us with their icons, and since we are chosen, we are simply more pure. We are more godly, which is how we have more ether in our blood. It has been that way since the beginning and will be that way to the end.
I didn't miss the fact she hadn't really denied the whole sacrificial virgin question. I probably should check out the temple soon and make sure they weren't hoarding virgins, adding that to the to-do list.
And you bear the icon of what god exactly? I asked. She tilted her head to the side, and it was pretty impressive that the elaborately coiled hair didn't topple her right over. You already know the answer to that.
Maybe I did. But I waited. Unclasping her hand, she reached up, curling her fingers along the folds of her dress. She pulled it aside, and for a moment, I thought she would expose her breasts, and well, that was going to end this conversation real quick, but she didn't, thank the worthless gods.
She exposed only the upper swell of her right breast, and there it was. A rosy-colored birthmark in the shape of the invincibility rune. The same as above the temple. A muscle worked in my jaw. It is the mark of the god of life and death. The one who is absolute, she explained, smoothing the sleeve of her dress. The appointed god.
That's a lot of names for one god, I said dryly.
For some reason, a weird memory poked free. It was when Alex had been hauled before the council under the false pretenses of discussing the demon attacks her mother had been a part of. The reasoning had been a ruse, and Minister Telly, who had been part of a secret group of dickheads hell-bent on taking down the Apollyon, had used the stage to try to get her cast into servitude. During the questioning, he'd called her something that suddenly raised the hairs on the back of my neck. He'd called her the Harbinger of Death. Except it had never been Alex any of them had to worry about. It had been me. A god we've waited a long, long time for. She folded her hands together once more. The prophecy speaking of the Appointed One was written into the void many centuries ago, and for hundreds of years, those born to serve the Appointed One have waited eagerly for their god. 22 years ago, that god was finally born. The prophecy was finally set into motion, and we answered the call to come to Andros. You are the appointed god, the god of death and life.
I stared at her for too long. It sounds unbelievable. It feels unbelievable.
Just like two Apollyons born within the same generation would have sounded unbelievable a handful of decades ago. Correct?
She had a point, but it doesn't make sense. The why me went unspoken, but it was clearly out there. Why would I be raised to a true god status when there were far better suited people out there? I mean, come on. Even with just the control over Akasha, I would go on a smiting spree for the fun of it.
There is a lot of information that exists deep within you. All that the Apollyons who came before you have learned exists within you. That knowledge is what enabled you to awaken and become the God-Killer.
I get that, but I wasn't the first God-Killer.
Alexandria was. But her fate had also been written, and her destiny was never meant to be yours. Karina turned, resting small hands on the railing. She was to destroy the god who sought to embroil the world in war, and that was all.
Because her creator, Apollo, still existed, he was able to stop her from becoming the true god-killer. She was always to become what she is today, a demigod.
And I was what, the enabler to it all?
Old anger resurfaced.
So everything I've done, I was fated to do.
Yes. Everything you have done, you were supposed to do.
Disbelief thundered through me. No. No way, I can't believe that. I did horrible things, and if you know me as well as you all claim to do, then you know what I've done.
I know what you've done.
I stepped toward her, arms lowering to my sides. You're actually telling me that all of that shit was predestined, and that I would become this... as what? A reward?
I wouldn't consider it a reward.
She focused on the ocean,
but it was predestined. You were to be created by Ares and to be used to awaken the true Apollyon, Alexandria. You were destined, along with your friends, to release the Titan Perseus, who would then free his brethren. Everything that has happened since then was fated, even the death of...
Don't say it, I warned. I do not want to hear how watching someone die was meant to be, happened because of my destiny.
Their destinies are only a small part of yours. What happened to them does not mean your fate is responsible.
She lowered her chin.
But everything has been leading up to this, to what you were always destined to be.
A god! Derision dripped from my tone.
Alexandria was meant to be the Apollyon, and you were always meant for so much more.
She looked over at me.
That may be hard to accept, but accept you must.
You fucking sound like Yoda, I muttered.
Excuse me?
Nothing. I sighed and refocused. Has this ever happened before? A god randomly created?
She patted the railing. The Olympians were birthed by the Titans. The god-killer was created by the gods as an absolute measure against any one supreme being. When Alexandria awakened, she did so to end Ares's rule before it could begin. When you were awakened, it was done so to usher in the New Age.
The New Age? I laughed harshly. What the hell does that even mean?
She angled her slim body toward mine. That everything we know is about to end, and a new era will begin.
Well, other than that sounding like a parade I can't wait to see, it doesn't really tell me anything.
Carina smiled faintly. That is not important right now. Josie is a part of your...
No! I cut her off. She is no longer a part of anything that has to do with me.
Why?
Her brows knitted together.
You fear yourself around her? That you will hurt her? Have you not realized anything?
Feeding is... I do not want to speak of her with you. That is the only warning I will give you.
My hands closed into fists.
What I do from here has nothing to do with her.
So your desire to seek vengeance against the Titans is driven by some other need?
My eyes narrowed. Careful.
She raised a shoulder and then turned back to the ocean. You are the first, she said after a moment. You are the only god to be risen, to be appointed with all the godly abilities. Do you know why the gods fear the god-killer so much? It is not just because you have the ability to kill them, but because you are absolute, when only three others are. Zeus, Hera, and Cronus.
And what exactly does absolute mean? I asked. I'd never understood why the gods had created the god-killer in the first place. Apollo had tried to explain it once before in the vaguest terms possible, claiming it was a checks-and-balance system. Ares had never explained either. It made no sense that they would create something that could ultimately destroy them. Then again, the gods seemed to excel in bad life choices. And mortals consistently created things that would lead to their ultimate destruction. So hey, what did I know?
You have the abilities of the gods, but you wield the ultimate power to destroy a godly being, she explained patiently. Since Ares's destruction, there is no natural end to your beginning. The only true threats to you now are Zeus, Hera, and Cronus.
My brows flew up. Wait. I get that Cronus could take my ass out, but how can Zeus or Hera do it when they weren't able to do it when I was the Apollyon?
Because you were the Apollyon. It added some measure of protection for you. But trust me when I say they would have found a way to destroy you, because they knew what was possible.
She paused.
They've always known.
Of course they'd known and failed to mention all this shit. So I'm guessing they're absolute?
Only absolute beings can kill. Absolutely. They could fight you, and perhaps they would win, she said. But you are the God-killer. The appointed. They would not be wise to seek to do battle with you.
Huh. Well, I was more badass than I originally believed.
You're immortal, Kyrios. You are a god.
Those words finally sunk through, and it hit me then, thunderstruck. I couldn't speak. I'd long accepted that I had no future, that once the gods had figured out how to end me, they would, and that my afterlife meant I'd be Hades's bitch. It wasn't until I met Josie that I ever regretted making the deal that took away any real chance to have a long, happy life. But now, I had a future. I had an eternity. It didn't matter what deal I'd made. The gods could no longer control my actions or my future. They could no longer control me. I shook my head, still bewildered by all of this, but I could no longer deny the truth. I'm a god.
Yes.
Carina pushed away from the railing and faced me.
And there is so much you need to learn.
Chapter 11. Josie. I was going to die. I was dying. Standing among tall elm trees so thick and full that only sporadic streams of light had broken through their bushy limbs, I could feel the life slipping out of me. Cool air raised tiny goosebumps along my bare arms. I tried to draw in a breath, but the air went nowhere. As I looked down at the beautiful white gown that tickled the tops of my feet, the gown I'd been so happy to wear. Blood poured out of my chest, spilling down the front of the gown, ruining it. Pressing shaky hands against my chest, it did nothing to stanch the blood flowing from between my fingers. Oh, gods, I was going to die. My knees gave out, but I didn't hit the ground. Arms folded around me, easing me down, holding me close. I blinked, trying to focus as I pressed against the warm, hard chest. Amber-colored eyes stared back into mine. Seth, I whispered, don't let me go. No, his face contorted. Tears filled his eyes as he lifted my head, pressing his mouth to my forehead.
I'll never let you go, Josie. Never.
My hands slipped away, falling to the sides. I tried to speak once more, to tell him that I loved him, that I'd always love him, but I couldn't force the words from my tongue.
Josie,
his voice cracked as he rocked us back and forth.
I love you. I love you, and I won't let you go. I will never.
Gasping for air, I jerked upright, and my eyes flew open. Darkness greeted me, and my body protested at the sudden movement. Every part of me ached, muscles, bones, and skin, probably even my hair. Everything hurt, but I was alive. It was just a dream, I whispered hoarsely, gingerly leaning back against the hard, cold wall. Just a dream. But there was something different about it, something too clear and crisp, too real. I could feel the fresh air on my skin, smell the metallic scent of blood, and I heard Seth, felt him against me. But he wasn't here. It was like those dreams I had while at the Covenant in South Dakota. The ones that had warned me that he was coming, and the voice had turned out to belong to Atlas, and he had come. They had been prophetic in their tone, and I had the same ache in my temples as I did then. I wondered if they were dreams at all, and if they hadn't been simple dreams, was the one of me bleeding rivers in a white gown a warning? None of that really mattered now. Weary, I closed my eyes and pressed my lips together to stop the bitter sobs swelling in my throat. Fuzziness clung to my thoughts, and I stilled for several minutes until it passed. My throat was dry and my stomach empty. I was so incredibly thirsty and hungry, and I couldn't remember the last time I'd had a glass of cool water or food that wasn't stale hamburgers or possibly rotten fries. The Titans tended to forget to feed us, and when they did, it was like they purposely found the most disgusting things to eat. But when hunger gnawed at our insides, we didn't really care what we put in our mouths. We became desperate. I was that desperate. Opening my eyes, I squinted into the darkness. I was alone again. I hadn't seen Mitchell in a while, and I had no idea if he was alive or if he was like that poor girl. Before I'd been taken away, the girl had begun to decompose. The stench had been choking. The female titan, Tethys, had finally removed the bound demigod's body and had done so without an ounce of care or respect for her. The titan had grabbed her by the shoulders and dragged her body out of the room. Dragged her! A shudder racked me. I was now kept in a smaller room with a packed dirt floor that smelled of roots and mold. There might be mice in here, but I tried not to think about that. I tried not to think about a lot of things. I had no idea how many days passed since Hyperion had snatched me off the cliffs in Malibu. There'd been at least three because I had been allowed to spend time in the sun three times when Hyperion had taken me above, and it had felt like days had passed between those times. But I couldn't be sure other than that there was a pattern emerging to his visits. Hyperion would feed. Another shudder worked its way through my body as I pulled my legs up to my chest. Sometimes he'd do it like Seth had done, like when Seth had fed off me and I hadn't even noticed, but Hyperion made damn sure I knew exactly what he was doing. He'd press his hand into my sternum until the skin bruised, and I'd fight until the pain took over and all I could do was breathe through it. It felt like every cell in my body was being scattered and the skin sliced off the muscles with a rusty butter knife, and I couldn't fight that. No matter how strong or brave I tried to be, the pain was all-consuming, and all I could do was shrink away from it, pray for an end, for the blissful nothingness that eventually followed. Other times, Hyperion, he was like a demon. He used his teeth. Resting my head on my knees, I folded my arms behind my calves. There was one bite mark along my right wrist, just below the gold band. Wasn't exactly deep, but it was bruised and raw, and it was healing. At least, I thought it was. The other on my left arm was rougher and fresher. The skin didn't feel right, and it still oozed blood, or maybe some other kind of fluid I didn't want to think about. Could demigods get infections? I had no idea. Wasn't like there was anyone I could ask. Once Hyperion was done, I'd be left alone for what I guessed was a day, maybe longer, to give my body time to replenish the stolen ether, just as like a mortal body replenishes lost fluids and cells. That's what Hyperion had explained, or taunted. It wasn't like he actually conversed with me. Neither did the female Titan. She was as cruel as Hyperion, perhaps even more so, but she was also afraid. That much I could tell, but Hyperion wasn't. Not at all. It felt like a lot of hours had passed since I'd seen Hyperion last, and that meant Hyperion would be returning soon. And I knew what would happen. He'd order me to follow him, and if I didn't, he'd drag me from here. Literally. Then he would take me through what had turned out to be a warehouse, out through the loading docks and into the empty parking lot. He didn't just let me sit out there and soak up the sun. Oh, no. He had to talk. And then he'd haul me back inside. I would fight at first, no matter how pointless it was, because I had to. He always won those battles, but I had the bruises to prove I didn't go softly into the night, or whatever. I wasn't sure if I could go through it all again. I didn't want to. A raspy moan escaped me, and I lifted my hands, sliding them through the dry, matted hair, tugging it back from my face. My hair felt coarse and gross, as did the clothes I wore. I hadn't showered since I came here. I knew I stunk, and I was okay with that because I preferred to look as unappealing as possible to Hyperion. Lowering my hands, I let them fall to my sides. My body tensed as I thought I heard footsteps. Air catching in my throat, I lifted my head and strained to hear more. Hope that someone, anyone, was going to rescue me had fizzled out and died after the second time Hyperion had fed on me, because I had screamed for my father. I'd screamed for Seth. Tears of humiliation burned my eyes. I'd screamed for him until my voice gave way, and Hyperion laughed. Apollo never came. And Seth? He never answered. He'd left me, and even though I'd planned to find him to prove that I loved him and to show him that he was worthy of that love, he'd left me, and I was here. I knew Seth didn't know I'd been taken. Every part of my being knew that if he had known, he would have come for me. I knew that, but being here was like an open wound in my chest. It festered and rotted, breaking my heart every time I thought of him. Every time that I knew he wasn't going to swoop in and save me. No one was coming. It was solely up to me to survive this, to escape. The only chance I had was when he took me outside. Hyperion once said that it helped replenish the ether, and I guessed it had to do with my father being the whole god of the sun thing. Running was the only chance I had now. Wasn't the best plan, but it was better than accepting this was my future, my life, until there was nothing left of me to give. And there wasn't just me to think about. There was Mitchell, and if he was still alive, he was here somewhere. He was beyond helping himself. I had to get him out of here before it was too late. I rubbed at my eyes, wincing since I was too rough on the raw skin. Resting my cheek against my knee, I closed my eyes. I must have dozed off, because the next thing I knew, my head was jerking up as the door opened. Hyperion filled the doorway.
Good afternoon, sunshine.
Fuck you, I spit out, tensing. He chuckled as he crossed the short distance.
So elegant. Want to try again?
I swallowed hard.
Go fuck yourself? Not necessary. He loomed over me. Get up!
Part of me wanted to refuse, but if I didn't, he'd put his hands on me, and I didn't want to deal with that, so I rose on weak legs and stepped around him. I started forward on my own, making it halfway across the room before he slammed his hand into the center of my back, shoving me forward. I nearly lost my balance, catching myself with a hand thrown out. That was rude.
You're too slow.
His fingers dug into the flesh of my shoulder.
You walk like an overfed cow.
I bit the inside of my lip as we entered the narrow stairwell. He all but pushed me the whole way up.
You actually remind me of a cow, he said,
as we went through a doorway where the double doors had fallen off the hinges.
A fat, spotted cow.
You have such a way with words, I gritted out as we walked past wooden crates and empty, dust-covered workbenches. My heart is all aflutter. His fingers dug in deeper, causing me to wince.
I'd think you'd have lost some weight by now. Your body must be holding on to the fat for dear life.
Wow, I muttered. Truth was, I had lost weight. The jeans barely stayed up. Hyperion reached around me, opening up the gray door. Sunlight poured in, and I squinted at the brightness. He led me down the ramp. The parking lot was vacant, with the exception of two empty delivery trucks that had been there since I'd first been brought outside. They were older models. The words Mill and Sons, Inc. were painted in faded red paint on one of the trucks. Weeds poked through the cracked cement. Several yards away, trees crowded the edge of the parking lot. There was nothing else around here. I knew this because I had never seen any buildings or heard cars off in the distance, and no one had investigated the screams. My knees wobbled as I walked ahead of Hyperion, the cement blistering hot under my bare feet. I had no idea where we were, but I imagined we were somewhere in the south, if we were still in the States. "Sit," he ordered, dropping his hand. Drawing in a deep breath, I started to do just as he said, but at the very last second, I sprung forward, forcing my legs to move. I took off. "Really?" Hyperion laughed. "You're going to try to run from me?" Legs and arms pumping, I ignored the stiffness and pain and ran as fast as I could. Tiny rocks dug into the soles of my feet, slicing my skin, but I kept running. I cleared the parking lot, darting through the trees. My lungs burned and my head thumped. I didn't know how far I could run, but I would run as... Fire erupted in front of me, swallowing a tree in a flash. Shrieking, I skidded and slipped. Arms pinwheeling, I whirled around just as pain erupted along the side of my stomach. My legs gave out, and I crashed into the ground. "That was actually kind of fun." Hyperion reached down, wrapping his fingers in my hair. He jerked my head back. "I was beginning to wonder if the fight had gone out of you already. If I'd broken you that easily." Panting through the pain, I forced my gaze to his all-black, soulless, and endless eyes. He smiled down at me. "That would have disappointed me." "I wouldn't want that to happen," I gasped out. "No, you wouldn't." His grip tightened as he knelt, wrenching my head back. "Guess what I did, sunshine?" I grunted as he tugged on my hair again. "I don't know. Walked an old lady across the street." Amusement flickered across his face. "I went back to visit your friends." I stopped breathing. His lips curved up. "They weren't there." Air rushed into my lungs. "They are alive? For now." He reached out with his other hand and cupped my jaw. "I tracked the little group all the way back to the Covenant. We can't get in there. Yet." Relief coursed through me. Deacon and Luke, Gable and Alex and Aiden were all safe for now. That meant something. Everything. "You know what I'd like to know?" "How you're going to die?" Painful tension built along the nape of my neck. "Charming." He smoothed a thumb over my lower lip, and I resisted the urge to bite his finger. "Where did your little god killer go off to? He wasn't with them." I held his gaze as I exhaled roughly. "I don't know." "And I don't believe that." He let go of my hair, and I dropped about a foot. Pressure eased off my neck. "Not for one second." I said nothing. Hyperion's thumb made another hard sweep along my lip, and then he leaned in. The muscles along my back stiffened painfully. "You know, there are many ways I can make you tell me." My heart thumped against my ribs. "Ways I haven't even begun to show you." His cool breath drifted over my mouth, and I had a horrible idea of what kind of ways he was talking about. His hand slid to my chin, and his fingers dug in, bruising the skin. "Where is the Hyperion?" A muscle flexed along his jaw, and then he rose, dropping his hand. "What, Tethys?" I slumped forward, catching myself with my hands. Unsure if I should be grateful for her interruption or not, I stayed quiet. "What are you doing out here with her?" she asked, and I peeked up through the clumps of hair. Tethys was gorgeous. Close to 6.5 feet tall, she had long sable hair and features that somehow managed to look delicate and fierce all at once. She wore leather pants like Hyperion did, but she didn't run around topless. A tight black tank top covered her chest and stomach.
"Did you seriously interrupt me to ask that question?" Hyperion replied.
She strode forward.
"So what if I did?"
"I wouldn't like it, Tet."
Does it look like I care about what you like? A coarse laugh sneaked out before I could stop it. Tethys's eyes narrowed, and Hyperion whipped around and moved so fast I didn't have a chance to dodge his blow. His fist caught my jaw, and I went down, hitting the ground on my side. Stunned, I lay there for a moment as my head rung.
You and I both know you do, Hyperion said as he turned back to Ted.
Anger flashed across her face as she raised her hand. Hyperion was faster, though. He snatched up her arm, yanking her against his chest as he grasped her hair in his other hand. He pulled her head back sharply. The gasp of pain was cut off by his mouth. He kissed her in a way that didn't really seem like a kiss. More like an act of punishment and brutality, but Tet seemed to enjoy it because his mouth couldn't silence her moan or stop her from slipping a muscular arm around his neck. Oh man, weren't they like related? Gross. But they were distracted, busy shoving their tongues down each other's throats, so I pushed myself up and glanced over my shoulder. The fire that had engulfed the tree was out. My heart raced as I took a step back and drew in a deep breath.
Don't even try it, Tet ordered.
My head whipped around. They were done making out, and both were focused on me. The chance to escape was gone. Defeat swamped me, giving way to desolation. Hyperion alone was bad enough, but with Tet involved, it would surely get worse. I folded an arm over my waist and waited.
Why are you here? Hyperion asked again.
Tet raised a dark eyebrow.
You're really not going to like why.
Hyperion sighed as he twisted toward the female titan.
Get on with it.
She smiled tightly.
Cronus is aware of her. He wants to see her. Now.
Chapter 12. Hyperion's grip on my arm was eventually going to snap the bone. Not that he particularly cared if he did. He'd done that god transport thing that I guessed was only reserved for the super cool gods. 1 second, all three of us were standing in the forest, sweat coursing down the side of my face, stinging in all the raw abrasions, and then the next second we were standing in cooler air in front of a massive mansion built into the side of a mountain. I was dizzy and off kilter as Hyperion started dragging me toward a sprawling front porch. I almost didn't notice them at first. They were just immovable objects on the ground, until I got closer. They were bodies. Horrified, I stumbled and would have fallen if he hadn't had such a grip on me. There were dozens of them, and flies buzzed around their bodies. Bile rose into my throat, but there was nothing in my stomach to throw up. I clamped my jaw shut and focused straight ahead on the front door of the home. There was a human male leaning against the house, but as we climbed the steps, the scent of decay and dankness grew stronger. The male grinned as shadows poured into his eyes, eclipsing his brown irises. He was a shade. Pushing away from the wall, he opened the front door for us. Tet stalked ahead, and I had no choice but to follow. Cronus. I was being taken to Cronus. Numb with dread and fear, I was barely aware of the walk upstairs or down the narrow hall. Tiny, wheezing breaths left me as double doors opened to a large bedroom. I didn't want to go in there. Instinct screamed out, but I had no choice. 2 titans were standing, one on either side of the bed. They were both males. One was bald and dark-skinned. The other was fairer and had shocking, bright blue hair. And I immediately thought of what Mitchell had told me. It was him, the one who'd done all those horrible things to that girl. Nausea hit me hard, and I had to look away. My gaze landed on the center of the bed, and then I wasn't thinking of the other 2 titans. My mouth dropped open. He was all white hair and wrinkled skin. A gnarly beard covered half of his face. His shoulders were slim, and his chest was sunken in, as was his stomach. Propped up by a mountain of pillows, this man looked like he couldn't lift his spaghetti arms, but he was Cronus. This was the Cronus.
Closer,
the old man gasped out.
Bring her closer.
Before Hyperion could step forward, the dark-skinned titan moved.
I will do it, he said,
taking my other arm in a much looser, kinder grip. Hyperion didn't let go.
She belongs to me, Perseus.
My eyes widened. Perseus? Wasn't he the one that Alex and Aiden and Seth had broken free from Tartarus to fight Ares? He'd escaped afterward and been responsible for freeing the rest of the Titans. Perseus chuckled darkly.
You've played long enough. For a week, to be exact.
A week? It had only been that long. Felt longer. Pain bit into my arm, and I gritted my teeth. For a second, I thought Hyperion was going to rip my arm right out of its socket, but then he let go and stepped back, joining Tad. I glanced up quickly at Perseus, but he wasn't looking down at me as he walked me around the bed to where he'd stood. As I drew closer, Cronus slowly lifted his chin. His black eyes were dull.
Am I not what you expected?
He coughed out a dry, brittle-sounding laugh.
You see only an old, frail man before you.
I didn't know what to say. Cronus's fingers twitched against the duvet.
I'm not like them.
His pale lips peeled back, revealing surprisingly white teeth.
It takes more than a few purebloods and a bound demigod to feed me. I'm older and more powerful. I need more.
Pausing, he exhaled heavily.
A few days with a demigod should. It should do it.
Oh, no. No, no. My skin began to crawl. I thought about all those bodies outside and realized they weren't mortals. They'd been pures. He'd drained them dry, and they'd been tossed aside as if they were nothing more than trash. I thought about Mitchell. Was he now tossed aside like Lauren the girl and those pures? Would I eventually become one of them?
We need to be careful,
the other Titan spoke, the one with the blue spiked hair.
She cannot stay here for long periods. It will not be safe for you, not until you are fully restored.
That is why I have not brought her here until now, Oceanus, Hyperion said.
The blue-haired Titan smirked.
And we're supposed to believe that? We know who she is. We know what you're about. All you concern yourself with is a personal vendetta.
Hyperion said nothing.
He thinks she will draw Apollo out,
Perseus stated, still holding my arm like I was going to run. I wanted to, but I wasn't stupid. There was no place for me to go.
The only thing he will succeed in doing is bringing the God-Killer to his door.
Air whooshed out of my lungs at the mention of Seth.
He will not find her, Hyperion argued. We are warded.
Wards are not permanent, Perseus retorted. And you do not know him. I do. He will get through the wards. He will find a way.
He hasn't yet.
Smugness crept into Hyperion's tone.
I will find him first.
Oceanus sneered.
He killed Atlas, you fool. He is a god capable of killing us.
Seth was an actual god now? I guessed that made sense since he was the god killer, but Apollo hadn't called him that. Neither had Hades. Hyperion rolled his eyes.
I am not afraid of him.
Perseus cocked his head.
Perhaps you should be. We all need to be cautious.
He will not be able to end me once I'm fully restored,
Cronus said slowly, painfully lifting his hand. He crooked a finger.
Bring her!
Panic exploded in my chest, and I dug in, but Perseus was strong, and my bare feet slipped on the hardwood floor. I threw up my hand, grasping the edge of the bed.
Why? I gasped out. Why are you doing all of this?
I'd asked Hyperion that, and never gotten an answer beyond his hatred for Apollo entombing him, so I didn't expect Cronus to answer. He did.
We want what our children took from us. We want to repay them for what they've done.
Revenge? This was all about revenge? Holy crap, lives were being destroyed and lost all over something that happened back before time was probably even recorded? And they accused Hyperion of having personal vendetta? Didn't seem any different to me. Oceanus moved toward the bed and slid an arm behind Cronus, easing him upright.
We must be quick. Closer, urged Cronus.
Fear overtook the panic. I fought, fought as best as I could, and the fight was over before it ever began. Perseus lifted me up like I was nothing more than a struggling kitten. Pressed onto the bed and held down, panic consumed me. This was it. This was going to be it. I knew it. The dream had been wrong. I would die here. I would die being used as a universal power adapter.
Don't be afraid, Cronus rasped,
his eyes lighting up as he placed a bony hand against my sternum.
The pain is only temporary.
Seth. Basil stood beside where I sat, his hands clasped together in front of him. There wasn't a speck of dust on his white clothes. He waited in silence. The damnable chair I sat in was almost the size of a throne. Actually, if I was being honest with myself, which was what I was trying to do, it was a throne. It was the only chair in what used to be the sitting room. A dais had been built at some point, and that was what the chair sat upon. So yeah, a damn throne. My hands tightened on the titanium-plated arms, and I tried again. Eyes closed, I pictured Hyperion's face and let myself slip into a void, opening up all my senses. I searched for him in the darkness. This is almost like when Professor Xavier uses Cerebro, I thought with a smirk. I was looking for the imprint the Titan left behind. It was how Apollo seemed to always know where we were and could appear wherever we were at any given time. Once I'd put the bottle down and started listening to what Basil and Karina had to say, I was figuring out there was a whole hell of a lot I could do. Karina had explained how all of this was possible, how I'd become what I was. A little part of me still almost couldn't believe it. But the proof was in the Pegasus. For starters, if I could picture the person or the place, I could easily transport myself there. I'd already figured that out when I'd popped in on Josie. Calling forth Akasha or any of the elements required a mere thought, and if I was very still and quiet, I could feel the power humming under my skin. I had to feed, though. It wasn't like before, like it had been with Alex all those years ago, or like it had been with Josie. There was no confusing need with want. I needed the ether Karina offered. I did not want it from her. That was the difference between feeding from her and Josie. I wanted it from Josie, because I wanted her, everything about her, but I couldn't do that to her. I also, frankly, didn't really care when I fed off Karina and she was several shades paler, or when she immediately excused herself and barely made it to the temple to rest. I only felt the barest flicker of remorse when she had shown up last night and there were dark shadows under her eyes. But if I didn't feed off her, then it would be one of the tall, blonde priestesses, and I couldn't do that. What in the hell did that say about me? Nothing good. Luckily, I did not need to feed every day. I started to recognize the signs, weariness, hunger for mortal food, and irritability. All signs that it was time to recharge. It blew my mind that no one had ever known that all this time this was how the gods had maintained their power. Exhaling roughly, I searched the abyss. But like the time before, I found nothing. Frustrated, I opened my eyes. I can't find him. Then he must not be on the move. Basil replied, "That has to be good news." I wasn't so sure about that. Just because Hyperion wasn't roaming around didn't mean the other Titans weren't, and Josie, she was still out there, maybe even still in Malibu. Or they'd left to find the other two demigods. Unrest filled me, and it had nothing to do with ether. There was an odd sensation in the center of my chest. Had been there when I woke up, almost like when you walk in the room and forget something. I couldn't shake it. Something didn't feel right. Thrusting my fingers through my hair, I narrowed my eyes as I stared across the narrow, empty room. I tried seeking out Apollo this morning. Couldn't locate him either. He must be in Olympus, Kyrios. I'd given up on telling the bastard to stop calling me master. I couldn't pop myself into Olympus. Since I'd never been there, I couldn't seek it out, but I knew of gateways that would let me in. Finding one would be interesting, and probably fun. But once I made it to Olympus, they would not be able to stop me from entering whenever I wanted, and that would be even more fun. Standing, I walked across the raised floor and stepped down. I started across the room when Basil said, "You should bring her here, Kyrios." I stopped before I was even realizing what I was doing. "I know you do not like to speak of her," Basil continued cautiously. "Perhaps your heart no longer feels the same for her. But even if you no longer want to be with her, it is not safe for her to be out there." Slowly I turned around and faced him. Power rippled over my skin. My feelings for her have not changed. They will never change. Basil tilted his head to the side. "So you still care for her deeply?" Part of me wanted to tell him to mind his own damn business, but I didn't. "She's Psyche Mu. I love her. I will always love her." Confusion marked his face. "If she is your soul, then how do you not trust yourself with her? That alone would ensure her safety." I opened my mouth to respond, but I found myself without words. Basil didn't understand. I hadn't been able to stop myself before. "But it is different now," whispered the voice in the back of my head. Listening to that voice, caving to it, was too risky. Spinning around, I stalked out of the door and past several servants who were dusting or doing whatever the fuck they always seemed to do in the many rooms. They, of course, practically kissed the floor when they bowed. I ignored them and went outside. Stopping under the shade, I scanned the horizon. Several small boats floated in the sea. I rubbed my hand against my chest, under my heart. I knew what the problem was. I needed to know if Josie was okay. I could do that without her knowing, since I'd done it before. I could keep watch over her from afar. After all, I was a damn god. I could do that. I should have already done this. Checked in on her after I'd seen her sleeping. Basil was right. It wasn't exactly safe, even if she could protect herself or if the people she was with could throw down. But if I saw her again, could I really leave her again? Lowering my gaze, I closed my eyes and pictured her face. A smile tugged at the corners of my lips. Her features pieced together so quickly, so perfectly. It was almost like she was standing right before me, holding on to her image. I searched for her. I found nothing. What the hell? I opened my eyes. Heart rate kicking up, I tried again, reaching out into the void, searching for her imprint, and there was nothing. Confusion rose swiftly. That didn't make sense. No matter where Josie was, I should be able to find her. Mentally backtracking to the last place I knew she'd been at, Gable's house, I pictured the home and felt myself shift. A second later, I was standing in front of the home Gable lived in. "Hell!" I growled. Immediately, I knew something had gone down here. The driveway was cracked, not just cracked, but split wide open, creating a steep crevice. My head jerked up, and I rushed past the rift and pushed open the door. It creaked and fell from its hinges, crashing off the floor, but I didn't really hear it. The house was utterly destroyed. What had happened outside had continued inside, and there were no signs of life, but I could feel it. A residue of power so potent that it was not from this realm. There was a coating that belonged not to just one god, but many. Stepping back from the destruction, my hands closed into fists as knots of unrest formed. Something had happened here. Something bad. And if I couldn't feel Josie, it meant one of two things. Her presence was being blocked, warded against me. Or she was no longer in this realm. Chapter 13. I willed myself across the hundreds of miles, from the coast of California, beyond the Badlands, to the office of the Dean of the Covenant University. Appearing in the center of the room, about 3 seconds passed before those in the room realized they had a visitor. Marcos was in the chair behind the large mahogany desk, reclining back, one leg hooked over the other, arms folded loosely over his chest as he listened to the two before him. Deacon was sitting. Luke was standing directly to his right. Seeing them and not finding Solos with them was all kinds of wrong. That bastard hadn't deserved what had happened to him. Marcus was the first to see me. Blood draining quickly from his face, he stood in a rush, bright green eyes wide. Holy gods! Luke spun and stiffened, his expression locking down as he easily glided to the side, blocking Deacon, who was staring at me like he'd seen a ghost. I smiled at the not-so-subtle protective move. Seth. Deacon breathed, coming to his feet. You just appeared, out of thin air. You know, there was nothing more annoying than Apollo or any of the other gods just randomly popping up whenever they wanted. I said, my gaze flickering over them as I walked toward the desk. But I got to admit, being able to do it is pretty fucktastic. Marcus continued to stare. I smirked. Yeah, spoiler alert. I'm kind of a god now. Pausing, I leaned forward, placing my hands on the smooth surface of the desk. Isn't that scary? Yeah, he breathed. It is. Raising a brow, I pushed away from the desk and crossed my arms. My gaze flickered to Luke. Sorry about knocking you out. No offense meant. A muscle flexed along Luke's jaw. Not sure if I'm supposed to accept that or not. I shrugged. Everyone can relax. I'm not here to start a riot or bring the roof down. How? Deacon breathed. How are you? Long story that I don't have the time nor the desire to explain. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw Marcus slowly sit down. Or his legs gave out, one of the two. I'm not planning to stay. Of course not, Marcus replied. I frowned slightly. I went to the house in Malibu. Looked like some crazy shit went down. Dark shadows were under Deacon's normally lively silver eyes. Yeah. Apparently we were never supposed to kill a Titan. Oh, really? I muttered dryly, using my zero fucks to give tone. Killing Atlas caused some major earthquakes. Luke explained, brows furrowed together. You didn't know that? I raised a brow. It also punched a hole straight into Tartarus, Deacon added, leaning against the back of the chair. Charred demons escaped right into Gable's living room. It was like a scene out of a horror flick. My stomach twisted. What? We fought them off until Hades and his men came up after them. Luke rubbed his fingers through his hair. Then Apollo showed up. Things got... What? I repeated, the dread increasing. A rare form of anger flashed across Deacon's face as he stared at me. You weren't there. How could you not be there? My spine stiffened at the meaning of his words. When I spoke, my voice was deadly soft. I like you, Deacon. I always have. So I'm going to say this once and only once. I had to leave.
But you're here now,
he said, pale cheeks flushing. Deacon, Luke warned, touching his arm.
No!
Deacon shook the half's hand off.
Josie stood up for you, defended you after you left us, left her. She stood up to Alex and Aiden, who were afraid you had turned into evil Seth, hell-bent on killing everyone.
My eyes narrowed.
She stood up to her father, to Apollo, when he showed up and started talking trash about you. She had your back.
Deacon went on, his hands boiling at his sides.
And you weren't there.
Anger rose to the surface, and guilt snapped at its heels as I snapped.
I couldn't be there. Be around her, Deacon. It's for her safety.
Safety? His laugh was harsh, and so very unlike Deacon. Akasha stirred inside me, and I pushed down the need to strike out. I liked Deacon and really didn't want to zap him through a window.
Look, I'm here to make sure she's okay, since I can't sense her, that's all.
Deacon's mouth dropped open. Behind the desk, Marcus briefly closed his eyes. You don't know.
Shit,
muttered Luke. As I stared at him, unease coursed through my veins like battery acid. I don't know what. Deacon stared at me. But it was Luke who said, after the demons were taken care of, Apollo told Josie that her mother had died along with her grandparents.
No.
Disbelief flooded me.
Apollo said,
I cut myself off, suddenly understanding. Apollo had lied to her this whole time. Luke nodded. Josie kind of lost it. A burst of Akasha left her, knocked Alex, Aiden, and me flat on our asses. Apollo vanished at that point. A wry smile tugged at my lips. That's my girl. But my girl was hurting. Gods, she had to be hurting deep because she'd always believed that she'd see her mom again once everything settled down. She'd even planned to introduce us. It was such a mortal thing to plan, but that was Josie. That was my Josie. A powerful demigod, but still so very mortal. The urge to seek her out, to offer the comfort I knew she was so badly in need of, hit me hard. But Josie wasn't my girl anymore.
Something wasn't adding up, though.
Apollo telling her the truth about her mother didn't explain why I couldn't sense her. That's not all. Marcus placed his hands on his desk. You shouldn't be here. Seth, you should be home. My arms unfolded as my frown increased.
My home?
The islands. Luke explained. Josie thought you might go back to the islands you grew up in. That's what she was planning to do.
She went to Andros?
Surprise stowed my breath. How in the hell did she figure out that was where I was going? I'd mentioned the islands only a few times.
Because she loves you,
whispered that same voice in the back of my thoughts, and it was 100% right. Because she loved me. Because she knew enough about me to figure out what my next steps would be. And she was going to come for me. I needed to get back there.
Gods, if she showed up and Basil found her, if she saw the temples and met Karina, and I could feel my form beginning to flicker out. Seth, wait!
Deacon's eyes were wide as he called out to me.
Josie didn't make it.
I stopped. My heart, my lungs, everything stopped except for the earth. Because it felt like it had shifted under my feet.
What do you mean by that?
Hyperion came after her. Luke's jaw tightened. We'd left Gable's house and moved to one of his relatives' houses, so we could have time to plan what everyone was going to do. Josie was outside with Alex. They fought Hyperion. Aiden went out there, but he got her. The edges of the room started to blur and turn white. Hyperion has her. Deacon lifted his chin. He's got her, and he's had her for about 9 days now.
9 days?
Hyperion had had Josie for 9 days. Terror exploded in my chest as a red-hot rage pumped through my veins. He had Josie. Marcus was standing again. Alex and Aiden left to find you, Seth. They've headed to the islands. I was already halfway gone when I heard Deacon say, "You should have been there." Nothing. I couldn't feel a damn thing. There was no trace of Josie, just like there had been no trace of the Titans. Panic clawed deep into my chest. There was nowhere to look, nowhere to truly begin. He'd had her for 9 days. My stomach twisted, and I thought there was a good chance that I might be sick as I stood in the sand several feet from the gently rolling ocean. There was nothing stopping the steady stream of images flowing through my thoughts, invading every second. They had her. And I knew what they were doing to her. 9 days.
You weren't there for her.
I hadn't been. Not when she learned that her mother was dead. And not when Hyperion had come for her. If I had been, I could have comforted Josie. I would have made her forget all the heartache and pain. If I had been there, I could have stopped Hyperion. If I had stayed a few days, Josie would be safely stowed away here, because now, when it no longer mattered, it was clear that Basil and Karina had been right. The only place Josie would have been safe from the Titans would have been here, with me. Fuck! I spat out. Centering myself once more, I searched for her, for anything, and there was still nothing. Spinning around, fury pounded through me. I roared as a bolt of acacia slammed into a tall tree halfway up the cliff. Who knew how long the tree had been rooted precariously to the rocky slope, probably centuries, if not longer, withstanding high winds and downpours and mudslides? Acacia obliterated the tree in a second. This couldn't be happening. I was a god. I was the god killer, and according to you and the nymph, Basil, and Karina, I was the appointed god of death and life. I was fucking absolute. And I was standing here, blowing up trees, and I could do nothing to help Josie. Lightning cracked overhead and the air sizzled as dark, tumultuous clouds rolled in, blotting out the sun. Turbulent emotions thundered inside me and into the environment around me. Pacing, I dragged a hand through my hair, clasping the back of my neck. I had to find her. Now. Coming to a halt, I searched the skies. I'd been out here for hours, trying to hone in on Josie's whereabouts, and when that hadn't worked, I tried calling out to Apollo, and he did not answer me. How could her father not have known? How could I love her, and have not known she'd been captured? How was I any better than Apollo? I wasn't. That was a damn sad truth. I'd lied to her. I'd put her in danger. I'd left her. I hadn't protected her. In a way, I was worse than her father, because at least he never got close to her. He never evoked a second of faith from Josie. She hadn't been planning to storm into Olympus to reconnect with her father. Josie had been planning to cross oceans to stand beside me. And I had fucking left her. It didn't matter now that it had been the right thing to do. Stopping, I turned to the ocean and exhaled, raggedly. Fear and anger battled with guilt. A streak of lightning lit up the sky once more. I sensed Basil's presence. You shouldn't be near me right now. Basil, of course, didn't hightail his ass away from me. Everyone is concerned. They fear something is wrong. Something is wrong. I turned around, finding Basil standing on the platform just above the sand, at the bottom of the stairs that led up the face of the cliff. Hyperion has Josie. His eyes widened. I don't know what to say. I can't find her. I can't feel her at all. Sympathy and concern flashed across his face. There must be something we can do, Kyrios. What I could have done was what I should have already done. That was the problem. A priestess appeared at the edge of the cliff, her long blonde hair blowing around her in the increasing winds. It was the one I'd kicked out of my bedroom. She kept her chin and gazed down as she spoke. A vehicle approaches the northern gate, Kyrios. Having a pretty good idea of who was in the vehicle, I willed myself off the shore and outside the impenetrable titanium gates that blocked the entrance to the house. A sleek, black Mercedes, with tinted windows, jerked to a sudden halt several feet in front of me. The purr of the engine quieted, and a moment later the passenger and driver's door opened. Damn! Alex and Aiden were here.
Josie. Cold water dripped and tiptoed down my brow. Water. Water. Blinking my eyes open, I blindly turned my head. Water glanced off my dry lips. I opened my mouth and then immediately gagged. The water tasted like spoiled eggs, but my throat was burning. I was so thirsty. I took in the tiny drops of disgusting liquid until my stomach churned. Drawing in a shallow breath, I rolled onto my side. I was back in the cellar, and I had no idea how much time passed since Cronus had fed. I tensed as an aftershock of pain flared through my body, scorching bone and tissue. I think he took too much. My hands and arms trembled uncontrollably as I stared into the shadowy cellar. Faint light trickled in from the small window. In the corner, near the door, I thought I saw something scurry across the floor. I felt no fear or distress as I lay there. Before, the mere idea of being in the same room as a mouse had me seconds away from screaming. Now, I just couldn't rally up the energy to be afraid. I didn't feel much of anything. Nothing. Everything had been stripped away. This was it. I understood that now. This was how it was going to end for me, because I really, really didn't think I'd survive another feeding with Cronus, or another one-on-one with Hyperion. Hope that I would find a way out of this had petered out toward the end of Cronus's feeding. The will to keep fighting, to keep existing, had plummeted out the window. It was weak. I was weak, but I couldn't do this anymore, and I just wanted to see my mom and my grandparents. That was all I wanted. Footsteps sounded outside, drawing my weary gaze.